Welcome to Not Another TV Lawyer.
I'm Chris Shakib.
I'm Jessica Hall.
And this is a podcast sponsored by the law firm Terrell Hogan that's been in Jacksonville for greater than 50 years.
And we are very passionate about helping people and personalizing our service to help them get the service they deserve.
Once again, I'm Chris Shakib, and this is Jessica Hall, and we're here on another episode of the podcast, Not Another TV Lawyer. And with us is Dr. Mike Sanborn, and we appreciate you coming. And Dr. Sanborn is a medical doctor in Jacksonville or the Northeast Florida area. And can you tell us what is the name of your practice?
Sure. And thank you for having me, by the way. It's Spine, Brain, and Joint Institute.
Okay. And what are the spine, brain, and joint? Obviously, you concentrate on spine, brain, and joints.
Yes.
But what does your practice concentrate on?
Honestly, so myself and my partner, Dr. Loopy, we're both trained in physiatry, physical medicine, rehabilitation, with a focus on pain management and specifically interventional pain management. So part of our practice is focused on the pain management side, and that's the spine and the brain. The spine and the joint side. So we do we see a lot of people that have sustained injuries to their neck, to their mid to low back. We see a lot of joint injuries, shoulders, hips, knees. We kind of think of ourselves as the captain of the team, and then we utilize, we kind of develop a treatment program for these patients, and that treatment may include therapy. Sometimes the patients come to us from the therapist, physical therapy, chiropractor. That may include medication, which often we'll prescribe. And we try and stay away from opiates and things like that. And then certainly the interventional side of what we do is a predominant, that's the major part of our practice. And that involves doing procedures to help relieve pain so they can hopefully get back to a semblance of their life prior to the pain.
Right. Where does the brain part come in?
So the brain is the other side, and I guess you could include that as part of pain. Some people would include that, so myself and my partner we actually both trained at Emory University in physical medicine rehabilitation. A large part of our residency program was focused on traumatic brain injury. And so he and I both spent several months at the Shepherd Center, which is one of the preeminent hospitals treating injuries for the central nervous system, which include both spinal cord and brain injuries. And we also spent several months at the Center for Rehabilitation Medicine, which is part of Emory University, just focusing on traumatic brain injury. At that time, we were doing mostly severe head trauma. So we had a lot of experience with that. The clinical part of my practice since finishing residency, which has now been 25 years.
It goes by fast, doesn't it?
It goes by very fast. I've seen brain injury from all, I've seen as an inpatient rehab physician, I've taken care of patients with severe head trauma after the acute stage. I'm also an internist, and I worked as an internist in the hospital, working in it's all acute inpatient medicine that would involve some critical care as well. And so I was involved in the medicine part of these traumatic brain injuries, severe traumatic brain injuries. And then since I've been here in Florida, which has been since 2011, I've seen the majority of my practice, which is what we're getting to, has been focused on mild traumatic brain injury, which is a large, we see a number of patients with these mild TBIs, another name for concussion.
So concussions are a big thing that people talk about now.
Yes.
I know when I was a kid playing tackle football, we didn't do much.
Absolutely.
I would wear a helmet that was called a water helmet, that it was cushioned, but it was like a sponge with water in it. So it was extra heavy.
Wow.
And yeah. There's no way they would, that would be legal nowadays, but I liked it because I would put it in the refrigerator before practice and it would keep my head cooled in practice, but it was, you know, it was so heavy that had to have been dangerous to have been that heavy.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, we're, folks are paying attention to these things now. In fact, we're seeing football players, you know, in the NFL wearing those special caps now that protect them, and they're
right.
They have new helmets.
And that's thanks to the CDC, and there's been a lot of attention on concussion, especially you know, with this chronic traumatic encephalopathy CTE, mm-hmm. and which was brought out from football players, I think Junior Seau and others. And then they had a movie which was focused on somebody with CTE. So that brought it into the mainstream, which is very good because absolutely, I mean, football, if you compare what flag, I've read this a while back, but comparing flag football to tackle football for kids,
right?
They're traumatic impacts to the head, 23 times greater for tackle football. And that's current. So it's pretty significant. And certainly the more attention that is that's paid to it, the better we are at prevention.
You mentioned the CDC. So when we get auto cases in,
yeah.
I have a checklist that's from the CDC that says if you have headaches, if you have light sensitivity, I go through this checklist with our clients, and if they answer, if I'm getting more yeses than I'm getting no's, I'm like, hey.
Right.
I think you might need to get seen for this. Like,
absolutely. It's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, because do you have light sensitivity? Do you have frequent headaches, noise, and you know, things like that? I go through the list and I'm steadily checking off what they're telling me on the list. And then when you get done, the whole list is almost checked off. And I'm right. Like, well, we got to get this person somewhere.
So that's smart because honestly, a lot of these mild TBIs, concussions, are missed. A lot of times patients that have sustained these just kind of explain away symptoms. They just, I've got a headache. I'm a little dizzy. I'm not thinking it's anything. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little more irritable. They don't even notice it, but it's their partner that notices it. It's that you have to, so when we see patients, patients after accidents or they're referred to us and we go through a checklist as well. We ask them those questions to try and identify patients that have had a TBI that may not even be aware of it.
Right.
And the key there is it's essential to identify them so you can begin
the proper treatment plan.
Yeah, early treatment.
So we know that this is something that people are paying attention to now and taking more seriously. I definitely, I've been handling injury cases exclusively since 1996, and even in 1996, it wasn't something we looked for as much. We called it closed head injury, and it was, it was a little different. Now it's something that we look for, and you hear about it being talked about, but what I don't always hear talked about is how do you treat someone with a traumatic brain injury, particularly, a mild traumatic brain injury.
Yeah. And funny thing, in 1997, I gave a grand rounds. So this is, my goodness, 27 years ago, on traumatic brain injury, on mild traumatic brain injury. And so there's a lot more that we can do now compared to 1997. Although there was a lot of literature back then, but it wasn't in the forefront. And people are like, why are you doing a grand rounds on, and it was geared more towards sports related concussions. But it was a great grand rounds we've come a long way. So with these concussions with mild TBI, everyone's experience is kind of unique, right? But there's some basic elements that we tend to see. Headaches, often a part of it. And those headaches could be more migraineous type headaches, post-traumatic migraines. Dizziness can be part of it. I would say more than half my patients that have had a mild TBI have some component of dizziness. There may be some mood changes, some irritability, some depression, certainly cognitive complaints. And that can be things just from mental fatigue. They're tired. They're not motivated. They're just feeling like they need to lay down and sleep. It could be problems focusing, attention, problem solving. It can be short-term memory. Things that you don't even, you use all those things every single day. And common complaints that I get from just to, from my patients, just day-to-day things, not even just the multitasking that we do at work and problem solving that we do at work, but somebody just doing some shopping, going to a grocery store, and now they don't, they have to go and they have to actually have a list with them, or they're planning meals. Like we use our memory, which is our short-term memory. Like it's a working memory where you are storing things and kind of using things that you see or things that you think about, and you're kind of problem solving in your head, right? And you're coming up with a solution. So you store things briefly to work that out. That part of it is often affected with these mild TBIs. So people have a difficult time, if they have the cognitive part of it, they have a hard time with problem solving. So the first thing we do when we see patients with mild brain injuries is we identify the problems that they're having, right? And so and I have to say, the first part of the best treatment is prevention. So if we're talking about car accidents, the number one thing you do is you got to wear a seatbelt, right? You don't want to drink and drive. Drinking, no seatbelt, and speed, going fast, are the number one things for automobile TBIs and deaths. So you avoid those things. You've at least given yourself, you know, a chance. Airbags certainly are important and have reduced the number of brain injuries. But when we see these, the first thing we can do is just implement some lifestyle changes. So, you know, back in 1997, it was rest. I mean, significant rest.
Right.
Now it is, we kind of think of it as relative rest. So meaning you want to relax, rest the brain, rest the body. That could be for a day. That could be for 2 days. It all is, again, each person's experience is unique. Their injuries are unique. And I base it on what they're feeling. In today's age, we have computers, phones, tablets, big TVs, all of these things. There's a lot of sensory overload. We got to shut that down for a period of time and let the brain relax, because with a brain injury, the problem is that with these mild TBIs, there's a biochemical process that's happening. That's the injury part of it. The brain is in an energy deficient mode. And so the more you're using your brain, the more energy you require. So we have to rest it. So that's the first thing we do with lifestyle changes.
I imagine with younger patients, that's hard to get.
Absolutely. So we bring in their parents.
Yes.
And we talk about how important that is, because it 100% that is the truth. I have especially games. So gaming, you know, I've seen a lot of teenagers that have sustained, you know, mild TBIs, and especially, you know, a young 15-year-old that, and they're gaming every day. That's a pretty significant sensory stimulation that as they're recovering. Now, as you go on in a TBI, it actually can be a form of therapy, but in the initial period, we want them to kind of, you know, take a break from that.
Right.
Well, I'm a gamer myself. And so I can understand that, because
right.
I play them to wind down. So sure. Because I don't have to think, and it's just mindless, and I can do that. So I could understand from your perspective and from like a patient's perspective, especially when their brains are not fully developed at that time anyway.
Right.
And now the brain is like, we must do all the things. We got to do all the things.
And there's a lot of, you're 100%. And in those games, mm-hmm. you know, like things like Call of Duty. And I mean, it's significant. I mean, there's visual and audio and your problem solving. And so I'm not a gamer, but, I know, my son was, and so I've watched it, and I know that the brain is involved in a lot of that.
So much of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'd like him to just take a break. And I certainly would I talk to the parents as well when we're doing that.
What about music?
So again, I think that, some sort of, certain music. There's a lot of genres.
Yeah.
Right. Initially, I would say, again, if we're seeing them right after, everyone is unique. But if they're like, you know, I need to listen to some soft, you know, relatively calming music, whatever it is, new age, meditative type music, that's okay.
Right.
But, you know, hardcore, you know, rap, metal, whatever, I think anything that's going to, again, stimulate those excitatory pathways in the brain that we want to kind of relax, because that is going on. I mean, they've measured all that, and they know that there's already a lot of excitation in the brain that we need to kind of quiet down. And I'm talking about the very initial period.
Okay. So we got a patient who's had a mild traumatic brain injury. They're in the first level of care, which is resting the brain. What's the next step?
Sure. And so part of resting the brain is also, if they're, say, they're avid fitness, they take a break out of the gym as well.
Now, that would be the hard part for me.
Yep.
Because I think I do stuff just about every day.
Yep.
And I feel like I haven't brushed my teeth if I don't.
Yeah. So initially, I mean, we just kind of, I mean, again, everyone's unique. So it may not be that you need to, you know, just limit yourself to household mobility and walks. If you feel like you can do more, you do more. And then we basically would do a symptom limited. All right, activity. But if your symptoms worsen, then you need to take a break. So you kind of get to know yourself. I would say that, the initial period outside of that, we're also making recommendations to avoid. And so again, good defense is good offense, for a football analogy, right? So to move forward and progress and get better, we have to avoid certain things. So toxins, alcohol, you know, we want to avoid that when we're right after a mild TBI concussion. Avoid drinking. Marijuana is a big one right now. Some people are in favor of it after a concussion. I truly think that, you know, it's probably not a good thing as you're recovering from a brain injury. Certain medications, even if there would be things to avoid. And that even comes into play with us. We're treating pain. At the same time, we want to avoid medicines that could impair and get in the way of the brain healing. We may actually add some supplements that could facilitate healing. Things like omega-3, fish oil, choline is another one that can be that beneficial. Creatine even is a fuel that the brain can use. And these are all anecdotal things, no, you know, double blind placebo controlled studies, but things that case studies. And I think they've been shown to be beneficial. I do make recommendations for some of those supplements. And this is the initial period. Once they're and then I don't let them go out and, okay, I'll see you in 6 weeks. These are patients that I'm going to bring back frequently. I may even see them the following week just to see how they're doing, especially if they're not in school, they're taking a break from school, they're taking a break from work. I want to see them so I get them back into their life, because we also know that, you know, getting somebody back into life is good for mental health and actually good for recovery as well. So we again, I've said this a few times, each person's unique. I like to see them frequently to make those adjustments.
And make sure they're on the right treatment plan.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And then we start getting into, you know, headaches, right? So if somebody has a headache is a common one that requires treatment. And seeing somebody who understands headaches, yeah, I think is important, because that could be a post-traumatic migraine, post-concussive headache, that we would treat much like a migraine, where we're using migraine-type medications, both for prevention as well as something we call a preventive therapy, as well as abortive therapy. It could even be, there could be a cervicogenic component, meaning that they've had an injury to their neck, and that's contributing to the headache. So we, in the initial periods, we're figuring that out, and then we're going to possibly start medication, possibly therapy, possible injections for those things. Dizziness is another common complaint, right? Would require further evaluation, and that evaluation would then lead to treatment. Mood disorders, depression. Don't let them, you know, we don't want somebody to be depressed for 8 weeks, 12 weeks before we start treatment. you know, we're going to start treatment. That could involve medication, that could involve therapy, counseling, cognitive behavioral therapy. There's a lot that can be done for these conditions.
Right. But the worst thing you can do is nothing or go back to life the way it was.
Absolutely.
What about driving?
So driving is one of those things, again, independent, probably initially, you know, you're going to take a break from driving. There's a lot that goes in to driving that we just take for granted. A lot of multitasking, a lot of problem solving, a lot of visual, spatial, depth, all of that. And that can be affected with these mild TBIs, right? So it can affect, again, the brain. It's an organ just like the heart, the kidney, the lung, but it just happens to be the probably the most important organ, and it makes you who you are and me who I am. And it's very complex, and it allows us to move, to think. It allows us to interact with our environment, perceive our environment, and respond to it in an intelligent way. And so when we have a brain injury, it affects those things. Driving is our ability to take a several ton, you know, vehicle into or in around other people and their cars and pedestrians that require us to have all the sensory feedback, process it quickly, and react to it. I've had some cases with mild TBIs where they haven't driven for, you know, 4 weeks. Part of that could be the visual spatial. It could be part of it could be anxiety, some post-traumatic stress. We see that. And I've had where we kind of gradually get somebody back into it when there's an issue, not to the point of where they need to go and get driver's training, but something where they're not putting themselves out on I-10 or 95. They're driving through the neighborhood. Maybe they have their husband or their parent with them just to test it out. And then I certainly make sure that, you know, somebody that is somebody that's unsteady when they're walking or they have, you know, ongoing dizziness probably shouldn't be behind the wheel.
Right.
Right. So there are things that we can assess and then make those determinations case by case.
Now, how do you, if a condition seems to linger and, you know, is not improving and it may suggest there's it's more serious than a mild traumatic brain injury. What's the next level of care? What are things sure. you look for? And
well, you know, so this is the thing. So a mild traumatic brain injury has, there's a specific definition for it, right? It's somebody that, so just one thing with getting back, so with the definition, you know, there are like, what, 4 million traumatic brain injuries in the U.S. alone. 80% of them are considered mild. About 10% have loss of consciousness. That means that 90% do not, right? So that's one thing that we know that somebody can have a brain injury without loss of consciousness. For a mild traumatic brain injury, you have this traumatic event, whether it's a car accident, a fall, a concussion related to sports, that results in a fairly early, immediate, you know, neurological change. There's some brain dysfunction. The definition of a mild TBI is that you have loss of consciousness less than 30 minutes. You have post-traumatic amnesia less than 24 hours. And that's your ability to recall and remember things after the event. And that your Glasgow Coma Scale, which is a very bad scale for mild TBI, but it is the scale, is 13 to 15. And so that is a definition of mild TBI. Now, we call it mild because it's not fatal. And it's not initially catastrophic. But the problem with a mild TBI is that it's not necessarily mild. So what you're getting, you're making the point, it is still a mild TBI. It could be based on the definition, but it's affecting their life.
It could be very severe.
Yeah. It has a personal impact. If somebody's suffering from a headache and dizziness, and I see it all the time, at least weekly, where I have patients like this, it's affecting their quality of life. It's affecting their interactions and their relationships at home. It's affecting can be affecting their job, which then has a societal impact when we're talking, you know, the financial impact of loss of work. There's so many things how this can affect our society.
So mild, if I'm hearing you right, when you say mild traumatic brain injury, that's not synonymous with saying temporary.
No.
So a mild traumatic brain injury can be a chronic condition.
It can. Yeah, absolutely. Most of them, most patients that have sustained a mild TBI, most of them will recover quickly. I mean, sometimes same day, some within a few days, some within a few weeks, some months, some years, some they have chronic ongoing problems. We do have, through studies, we do know that there are certain conditions that will, they're kind of risk factors for having this prolonged recovery. And when they have a prolonged recovery, I'm getting into looking at, I'm evaluating it in more depth. That could involve imaging, something like an MRI, but a specific type of MRI. So there's different things, but one, the one that I was getting at is a diffusion tensor imaging.
Okay, DTI.
Yeah, DTI.
Okay, yeah.
And in the and what that is, so a DTI compared to a traditional MRI, right? So mild TBIs in general aren't thought to result in structural changes, right? It's a functional type injury. However, there are changes that are occurring at that at the microscopic level. A traditional MRI is essentially the same as if we could just look through your skull and see your brain. Somebody has a stroke, you could probably see it, you know, if you were looking at their brain. Somebody has a tumor, you could probably see it. Avascular malformation, you could probably see it. Somebody with a mild TBI, you couldn't see it. What the DTI does is it looks deeper, and it does that by looking at the flow of water. It looks at the diffusion of water. So that's where the diffusion part of it comes in. Water normally diffuses in one direction, so it's linear. When there's an injury, and what the when you have this force that is imparted to the brain, it causes the brain to move, and it causes a stretching type injury to the neurons, to the axons, which can then disrupt the messages. And they see that on a DTI with the flow of water. The flow of water no longer is linear, it will flow out perpendicular. And that's what a DTI will show you. The amount, it's the ratio of how much water is flowing in a linear versus how much water is kind of leaking out from the sides.
Okay. And if you see that, what's the next step?
Yep. So we see that quite a bit, right?
Right.
And we can see that. So in all, I guess, stages of a mild TBI, I have found in my practice that the more severe the findings are with on your DTI, I often see that with more significant symptomatology in my patients. But we're going to bring up, now we're going to be aggressive with therapy. That could be physical therapy, vestibular therapy, psychotherapy, cognitive therapy. That can involve medication. Again, I mentioned medication for headaches. We have medication that we can use for attention, focus. We have medication that we can use even to facilitate memory. We will be very aggressive in treating somebody's mood disorder. Again, not just therapy, but medication. We know that the earlier we get on that, and the earlier we do that, the better off they are.
You mentioned vestibular therapy. What is vestibular therapy?
So vestibular therapy is so I have a patient. So we have somebody that complains of dizziness, right? So dizziness can come from various things. Dizziness, when we think of our balance, a balance involves a sensory feedback from the eyes, from our limbs, and then the vestibular organs, the semicircular canals that sit in our inner ear. And our brain then processes the information from these three centers. If one of them has been injured or others have been, two or three have been injured, you will feel unsteady, right? So first thing we do is we figure out where the dizziness is coming from. That could involve an evaluation of the vestibular system with a VNG. And that is going to tell us if there's been, peripheral or central vestibular dysfunction. Often it's central. 90% of these cases are central versus peripheral. And then you can have an ocular dysfunction where the eyes aren't tracking together. We can identify that. Each one of those things is going to require therapy. Vestibular therapy is kind of balanced therapy. And so it specifically will it will work on the patient's ability to move while to improve their balance by focusing their eyes on a target while moving their head, right? Or moving their eyes while keeping their head stationary. And they initially do that when they're stationary. And then they eventually start doing that when they're walking. And then they start doing that when they're walking and doing another task. So they're increasing the level of the challenge level and the amount of sensory input that comes in. And we know that therapy is very beneficial for those types of injuries. Medication, not so helpful with dizziness and vestibular dysfunction.
So Dr. Sanborn, if someone wants to refer you a case or another practitioner wants to refer you a case because they suspect somebody has some of the things that you discussed today, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, certainly they can look at our website, mm-hmm. And that is the spinebrainandjointinstitute.com, or they can call the office as well. That would be 904-374-3672. That's probably the easiest way. And then we have, I believe, online through our website. They can submit a referral that way, as well as when they call, we have a referral coordinator that can take those. And we'd be happy to see and treat the individuals and get them back, hopefully, to a good quality of life.
Well, it sounds like the worst thing they can do is nothing. And that if something like this happens, that they need to find you. Because
yes.
The sooner they do, the better they'll be.
Myself, or I mean, they're doctors that... It really does matter to see somebody who understands it, and so that can begin this treatment and do it the right way.
Right.
Well, we appreciate you being our guest.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. We enjoyed it.
We were very glad to have you, and hope to have you back sometime on the podcast, Not Another TV Lawyer.
Thanks again for listening to Not Another TV Lawyer. We hope that you will tune in to the next episode.
Not Another TV Lawyer is sponsored by my law firm, Terrell Hogan Law. Terrell Hogan represents people in a lot of different areas of injury type law, as well as business claims throughout the state of Florida. We represent people in auto accidents, trip and falls, people who have been exposed to asbestos and developed conditions related to that. Victims of medical negligence, victims of defective products, including medical devices and pharmaceuticals.
Please feel free to look us up at www.terrellhogan.com. We look forward to hearing and being with you soon.